Good morning. My name is Jim Graham, and I'm chairperson of the Metro WMATA Board of Directors. And I call to order this special meeting of the board. It is January the 7th, 2010. We have a very specific agenda, which we wish to consider in this open meeting of the Board of Directors. Before moving any further, I want to make an addition. Well, is there a motion to approve the agenda that's before us? It's been moved. Is there a second? Okay. It's been moved and seconded. Moved by Ms. Hewlett and seconded by Mr. Zimmerman. I would like to, unless there's without objection, to add to the agenda a discussion of a letter that the board has received, addressed to me as the chairman, from Senator Mikulski, and we have a draft response, which I think really does merit the discussion of the board. And so, without objection, I'm going to add, following the Roman numeral 3, a new Roman numeral 4, which will state that we will discuss the response to Senator Barbara Mikulski and the questions that she has raised. Is there objection? Is there objection? Hearing none, that is so ordered. Further discussion on the agenda? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye. Aye. Opposed, no. The ayes have it, and the agenda is approved. We now proceed to Roman numeral 3. Let's see. Do we have the... Okay, Roman numeral 3, which is the board consideration of actions regarding the FY 2010 budget, including proposed service reductions and other actions. Let me say at the outset that I think that there is a consensus among the board that this matter will be referred for public comment, and that we're not having public comment today as we typically have in our board meetings because, quite frankly, it hadn't been announced. I know there are people here who would like to comment. We very much appreciate and respect their interest in commenting. But without a more formal announcement of that opportunity, I feel a little uncomfortable in having that public comment now. And also, we will have ample opportunity for public comment on whatever action the board takes today. So that is the reason why some of you have asked me, can we comment at the outset of this meeting, and that we're not going to do for the reasons that I've just stated. So we now proceed to our general manager for his report on consideration of budget actions.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the board. On October the 8th, I informed you that rail and bus ridership was down both against the approved FY 2010 budget, but also against our FY 2009 ridership levels. At that time, we projected that the annual FY 2010 revenue losses would be at least $22.4 million, and that forecasts anticipated that we would be at our budgeted revenues by January of 2010. Some of the ridership loss can be attributed to the June 22nd accident, though most of our loss in ridership is a result of the economy. As you know, Metro's experience is not unlike other transit properties across the nation. Nationally, total transit ridership is below the same period last year, with bus ridership falling even worse than rail. While some economic indicators show that the worst of the recession may be over, our current ridership is still less than what was anticipated in the adopted budget and what we experienced in 2009. At this time, we anticipate that we will not reach the ridership and revenue numbers in any month by the end of this budget year. Year to date, our average ridership or weekday rail ridership is almost 2.5% below the FY 2009 levels and more than 5% below the budget. Our bus ridership is almost 6% below FY 2009 levels and 12% below the projections in the FY 2010 budget. Not all of the news, however, is bad as we look forward. The average weekday ridership on rail in November was 1% below FY 2009, so we hope we're beginning to see some recovery. In July, it was, if you recall, it was 4% below the 2009 levels. But even with this growth, or decline in the rate of decline, we will still be below our budget projected ridership in bus and rail for the year. We have acted aggressively to deal with the ridership and revenue loss. In November, I outlined a plan to offset as many of the costs related to the June 22nd accident as possible, to implement sustainability initiatives like payroll processing improvement and rail scheduling efficiencies. We're moving towards and forward on both of these efforts. However, the economic recovery and the related rebound of our ridership numbers is not coming as quickly as we had hoped. At this time, we anticipate a shortfall of $38 million, almost $35 million from passenger revenues.
Mr. General
yes.
Manager, may I interrupt you just for a moment? I see that your PowerPoint
has not moved.
Is there a reason we're not seeing any movement in the presentation?
Yes, because this is the opening statement.
Oh, I beg your pardon. Oh, the opening statement. Okay.
In addition to our ridership and revenue losses, we also were faced with expenditure pressures. Unfortunately, we were able to apply some savings against the budget for power, fuel, and utilities. We also have recovered costs that we incurred with this for last year's inauguration and have applied those against the 2010 budget. Those efforts have helped us offset our pension losses, increase insurance costs, and many of the other expenditure pressures that we're facing this year. Again, based upon the expenditure increases, the total gap projected for this year's budget is $40 million. We must deal aggressively with this problem now, especially in light of our projected $175 million budget gap in 2011. The plan that we will present to you today includes some of these items that we have already talked about, such as insurance recovery, using stimulus funds for preventative maintenance, should we receive the approval of the Federal Transit Administration, and other actions. We have several possible actions that we're proposing to the board today for consideration. And I would like to ask that Carl Kissel, our general manager, deputy general manager of finance and administration, make that presentation to you.
Thank you. And actually, we can go through the next several slides relatively quickly since Mr. Cato has already described the ridership and the revenue decline that we're experiencing for all the reasons that he had indicated and we have indicated to the board in the past. So we can actually go right to page 3, if you like. And again, this just shows the ridership levels that we had communicated. The downturn at Metro is a reflection of the economic crisis and the unemployment and loss of jobs, which impacts rail and bus. The ridership news is not bad, as Mr. Cato had indicated, because off-peak trails, trips have grown some during the same period compared to consistent ridership losses in the AM and in most of the PM peak periods. The ridership losses we've experienced also seems to be diminishing, which is less severe ridership losses each month. We progress further into the fiscal year. We started with a year-to-year overall ridership loss of almost 4%, if you recall, in July, and have progressed to losses of only 1% in November. We also expect December's ridership losses to be a fraction of 1%, so that's relatively, hopefully, good news. However, as we told you several times, the short-distance trips are growing, partly because of the population changes in the district and the close-in suburbs. These trends these trips tend to be off-peak trips and trips which pay the minimum fare or close to it. One consequence of this new mix of trips is an erosion of the rail average fare, resulting in less than the budgeted rail revenue that's in our budget currently. If you go to slide 5, I'll skip on to slide 5. This is major transit, San Francisco, Chicago, New York, have already taken actions on service reductions, on levels of reductions in layoffs, as well as fare increases. So we are not alone in this. On page six, through the end of November, just to give you a picture, rail ridership is below the same period last year by 2%, or almost 2 million trips, while bus ridership declined by 3.5 million trips, or 6% below last year. Rail ridership 6% below budget, while bus ridership is about 9%, or almost 6 million trips below budget. If you go to page seven, on the revenue side, year-to-date, revenue is below budgeted by $22 million overall. The largest variance is in the rail revenue, which at $205 million is about $15 million below budget. In addition to the rail shortfall, we also experience less than budgeted bus and parking revenue, and these shortfalls percentages are fairly consistent with our ridership losses to date. On slide eight, given the current ridership and revenue trends, our forecast of where we expect to end the fiscal year predicts a total revenue shortfall, as Mr. Cato indicated, of about $39 million, 35 of that, which is a shortfall in passenger revenue. Of course, the largest share of that, $24 million, is a shortfall in rail passenger, and the $10 million shortfall in bus, with a slight decrease in metro access. The forecast predicts that as we enter into the last quarter of this fiscal year, April to the end of June, that the decline in ridership will level off, which will result in a total year growth that reflects more of the 2009 levels that we have seen. This is a prediction and a forecast that we're making, and we're hoping to meet that, although we will update the board as we move forward. On slide nine, the action plan that we have communicated and recommending to the board to mitigate these budget deficits are the insurance recovery claim that we anticipate, which will offset some of the expenses that we've experienced as a result of the June 22nd accident, an increase in the maintenance of equipment program, which has identified about $12 million in parts capitalization, which is primarily used to extend the useful life of our assets, departmental reductions for non-essential positions, and we will align our call center hours with demand. And as Dave Kubicek will take you through some of the bus and rail service reductions that are in this presentation. In addition, we're recommending $10 million in stimulus funds, which reflect surplus funds that are based upon projects that have come in under estimated costing levels. Again, this would have to be approved by the FDA, but these are eligible expenses. Slide 10 talks about an alternative option, an additional option, which would be to increase the maintenance of equipment program and capitalize additional parts for assets up to $16 million, which would mitigate the impact on the service reductions that we are recommending in this presentation and that Dave will take you through. An advantage of this approach would allow us to focus on the deficits that we are seeing in FY11, and we would be able to accomplish a more comprehensive plan rather than doing this in two pieces. I will let Dave Kubicek take you through some of the service reductions at this point.
Good morning. Based on some of our town hall comments that we had prior to this budget process, we did take comments from the public about spacing of stops, you know, looking for efficiencies in Metro Bus, also traffic patterns. In Metro Rail, we heard comments about closing of mezzanines and matching of service, you know, to ridership demands. Next slide, please. One of the things that we're also factoring in is, as we work on this process, is being proactive on how we would coordinate our public outreach of any potential change in service, be it bus or rail. And these are some of the venues that we would exercise upon. Next slide. What we're looking at this stage is widening of off-peak of headways on Metro Rail, middays and early evenings, looking at also the weekends, widening it anywhere from 3 to 5 minutes, weekend and late night, depending upon the alignment. We're looking at expanding service anywhere from 10 to 5 minutes of headway. Next slide. The graph doesn't show up on this slide here. There we go. One of the things that, as we looked at this, is in this area here, we do have redundant service, you know, where we do have shared corridors. So while there will be impact there, you know, since the blue and the orange share the same alignment, it does minimize the impact somewhat. Next slide. Travel time for our, you know, for our riders, that's one of the things we were looking at is with this redundancy and just to make sure that we were able to maximize this approach. We're looking at a potential savings of right around $1.9 million as we work on this. A lot of this will be strictly focused on the propulsion aspect of it at this stage of the time. Next slide. Weekday service, so we also looked at our ridership stuff in the morning, looking at adding just a couple of minutes, you know, as we deploy our equipment and stuff. We're seeing trends where the ridership ramps up a little bit later in the day, so we're looking to maximize that as much as possible. The savings is a little over $100,000. Right now, we're also looking at the evaluation of the 8-car trains, you know, the deployment of where we have those at. During the peak service, one of the items was to look at, you know, possibly reducing the 8-car trains and have everything operate at sixes. This gives you an idea of the monetary amount of savings that's associated with that. Okay, this graph in here, it's a pretty busy graph, but the main component that we wanted to kind of look at to show some evaluation of our thought process was basically, you know, the loading as we open up headways and the loading that we would see on the respective alignments if there was any increase as we start modifying this. This model, we use this in several different applications. So this graph is just kind of a summary to show you some of our thought process as we evaluate these options. Next slide, please. The other thing that we're also looking at is our holiday service. That would be both for, you know, bus and rail to really, you know, match those up, you know, complement those, looking at our ridership and also understanding our ridership corridors a little bit better on that. That kind of gives you an idea. The savings for the $35,000 was just about some of our peak trips that we were sometimes used, but there might be more money and savings of that, but that's initially what we have found. Next slide. The other component is, and this is since we're operating in a manual mode on all of our alignments, we also looked at our end-to-end running time, especially, you know, on the red line. With this operating in manual, it has slowed down the system. Some other things that we looked at, we went back in time. With the opening of the New York Avenue station, we didn't really see where there was a really good positive addition to the budget as far as the schedule adding that in there. The other thing is we also looked at was dwell times. They look at about 20 seconds for dwell time at our stations, but as we know, if you go to LaFont or Gallery Place, our boardings and exiting is not going to happen in 20 seconds. So we're looking at adding a little bit more time in the schedule so that way we can have a more of a realistic service that matches what we're actually capable of doing. So we will add 4 to 5 minutes, you know, on the red line on that line there. Okay, next slide. I kind of covered this already, just, you know, widening it just for the simple fact of not having the ATO ability, but also looking at our dwell time and some of the areas that we were missing some of the scheduling. Next slide. Grosvenor Turnback on this one right in here. We did evaluate if we were going to eliminate it, you know, run all the way out. This top number in here really represents the stations north of Grosvenor out to Shady Grove, where we were looking at our loading of about, you know, 6,600 people per hour. So that amount of people, if we don't extend out, there will be some crowding and such. It is attainable. But there is a savings if we do not do that, and it equates to about $1 million if we do not extend that out. Next slide. We also went through and reviewed the closing of mezzanines, you know, on the weekends. This gives you kind of an idea of what we see in the ridership. And the big focus here is that these are dual entry stations. So if we have one area closed, there's a station or entry to the same station one or two blocks away. And next slide, please. The other thing that I would note on that slide as well is at the footnote is during the baseball season at Navy Yard, if we were to have like a baseball game or some type of special event, we would naturally, you know, open up the both sides of the station. But we would revert back whenever there wasn't a planned event or at least something that we weren't aware of. Okay, then we're also looking at mezzanine closings, you know, on the weekends as far as, you know, access, kind of the same philosophy as the one, you know, previous. We're talking about, you know, low customer count going through those. Monetary savings there. Next slide. This is just a geographical view of some of the, you know, closing of the mezzanines to kind of give you an idea of where we're looking at throughout the system. Next slide. Okay. Metro bus service adjustments. Right now, at this stage, you know, we are provided, you know, we have guidance on what we can actually change at the general manager's, you know, the discretion. This lists that. Just kind of a relisting of what we're working off of. Again, our actions directed to us and staff are basically, you know, to integrate headways, continue to look for headway adjustments, you know, trips, and utilize our information that we're starting to get from NextBus as much as possible. Next slide. Some of our recommendations for, you know, minor adjustments, you know, low-performing trip elimination would affect 31 lines, you know, saving about 15 buses. We're also looking at, you know, some of the lower-performing routes, saving us, you know, 1,400 hours, restructuring of the three lines. And what we're looking at is if we can implement these, we're looking at a savings of right around $1 million. And again, this is dependent upon us being effective in a timely manner. Slide is probably not useful in this environment here. A little too much to detail. This right here, what we have is basically the summary of the changes during the peak. The off-peak, the weekend. It also notes about the elimination of low productive trips and weekday and as well as weekend trips. And these are the alignments that are noted. The impact of this headway changes and trip eliminations, we're looking at this and saving right around $700,000. Again, we're listing our savings in buses, equipment, operators and technicians, and then we also provided a chart here that gives you a breakdown in a per district and a region area. Okay, this right now we'll start going into a little bit more detail, so it starts breaking it down, so I'll make sure I keep the pace. As we look at this right in here, we work through these items on the alignment.
Mr. Kubitschek, can I pull you back out of the forest just
Thank
for a
you.
Moment here? Is that I let me get some clarity on one major issue, which is I understand the general manager is recommending to us today certain major options, and I find on page 9 of the PowerPoint one major set of options. Am I right?
Yes.
And then I turn to page 10. Do I see these four bullets as a second option, all four bullets combined? Is this an option in lieu of all or part of the option of the plan, rather, on page 9? Can you help me understand?
Yes, this is in lieu of the majority of the options on page 9. On page 9, we will still take the administrative actions, the call center, a minor adjustment, I think a 30-second adjustment during the peak hours on the rent line.
Let me do it this way,
yeah.
So just for the sake, because we didn't get quite the clarity, at least I didn't get quite the clarity that I need on what's before us today. So in terms of the budget action plan on page 9, this would be one option.
Yes.
In its totality. When we go to the second option, if I understand this correctly, we are in effect, the major change in effect is the four-point is the $4 million for bus and rail reductions, which is significantly reduced, not eliminated, but significantly reduced into what you term minor peak adjustments and minor headway adjustments. Is that correct?
That is correct.
And all other parts of what's to be found on page 9, for the most part, remain part of the second option. Am I right?
Yes, that is correct.
Okay, so there's what we might term option 1 and option 2 as I've just defined it.
Yes.
Is there a third option that you're presenting today?
I am not presenting a third option today. Those are the two options.
Fine. Just this is, again, these are just clarifying questions. So that what is before the board insofar as the recommendations from the general manager is option 1 on page 9 and option 2 on page 10.
Yes.
Is there discussion on the recommendations from the general manager? Yes, I think so. Is there discussion?
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Mariel.
I appreciate the presentation by the chair and the staff, but why, other than the personnel that are affected with the bus and rail reductions, why have we avoided looking at other personnel line items throughout the whole agency? And fully appreciate and recognize the decline in passenger usage and everything else, all the reasons that have been provided, nothing new. But why, and then exclusive of bus and rail, some of the reduction options that are being presented are just nitpicking, you know, 35,000 here, 100,000 there. I mean, to really get at what the problem is, it's either, you know, we could probably look at, you know, X number of personnel slots, generate, you know, millions of dollars you need there, be done with, that doesn't further disrupt passenger service and usage, and or, you know, what's not presented, and this certainly for us, the chairman said, is there a third option or a fourth option? Other options can come from the board in terms of fare increases, what have you. So, but I'm more particularly concerned about why no focus on personnel.
If I may, if we could go back to slide 9, the third bullet down, department reductions, that is personnel, that's administrative staff. And that's for FY10. It's a much larger number as we get into FY11 because it's only 4 months out of the year. That's administrative staff.
But a lot of that is, I mean, if I remember reading something, there are already vacant slots now, right? I mean, that's part of that 2.2 million?
Yes, the 2.2 million includes almost 60 positions that are filled positions. So they would be actually people being laid off.
That are filled positions?
That's correct.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor. Mr. Zimmerman?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A couple of questions. On slide 8, where you showed the revenue forecast, I'm looking at the lines for budget variance and forecast variance for Metro Rail and Metro Bus. And I note that your forecast for the bus variance, well, it's 5.2 basically the so far, and the forecast is 4.8, which is to say, the forecast is consistent with the experience of the first half of the year. On the rail side, on the other hand, you show a fairly striking change. From the very steep losses in the first half of the year, you're forecasting a significant recovery, essentially. Now, obviously, this whole thing working depends critically on those numbers being right, since we're thrown into this problem by a fairly slight change, actually, in ridership. It's not clear to me why you're confident that you're going to have that much recovery, particularly because they're not proportional. You don't see the same thing happening on the bus side that you have on the rail side. What's the reason for the difference in those two projections?
It's really based on the model, model that we use to forecast ridership, which is an economic model. And in that economic model, it takes into a lot of consideration variables, such as jobs, the economy, the region's economic condition. There's a list of variables. And actually, we're bringing to the board, I believe on January 14th, a discussion of that economic model. based upon that economic model, the rail elasticity is very small, and we see actually an improvement in rail ridership, even with some of the December preliminary numbers that we have. So what we're anticipating is by the time March and April comes, we would be the decline would be less in rail, and that by the time we get to June, we would almost be at ridership levels that reflect more of our budget that we hit.
Okay, based on what? I'm sorry, you said elasticity, but with respect to what?
As I said, the model that we use to predict ridership. That's
well,
the forecast.
I realize the model. I'm asking why the model's projecting that. What is it in the, you know, what are the things that are the model's taking into account that suggests there will be this recovery?
Oh, it's obviously taking into actual ridership that we're seeing. So in the months of ridership that we look at, the decline is lessening in rail, faster in rail than in bus.
Okay, so this just both basically just reflects that that's what happened in November, so we're extrapolating.
We're extrapolating, that's correct. I mean, the forecast is just that, it's a forecast. Could it get worse? It could, but this is the forecast that we have currently.
Yes, but to evaluate the likely accuracy of the forecast, we have to understand what underlies it. If
yes.
All it is extrapolating from a month's experience or a couple months' experience?
No, it looks at actual ridership over the last couple of months and the decline in the erosion that we're seeing in rail. It looks at the economy. It looks at the all the variables that we use in our model. So it looks at unemployment rates. It looks at the residential region and the residential increase that we've had in the district or in the region. It looks at all sorts of things.
I understand the impact of the background economic condition because that's mostly what drives your ridership anyway.
Right.
But the fact that there is a disparity in the performance of the two suggests something else, either something about the model's assumptions or something about, you know, perhaps, right. I mean, if that's right, if it's able to forecast that, then it's telling us something about the relationships.
Right. Well,
on the other hand, I'd like to know that, I'd like to have some reason to believe that's actually true.
As I said, the elasticity in the model for rail is very low and ties
elasticity
to...
Elasticity with respect to what?
With respect to ridership and demand and price, if you will. Elasticity of price is what I'm speaking about. So what I'm talking
okay,
about
but
is...
Okay, but fares don't figure into this.
Yes,
so,
no, I understand that.
So there's not a price elasticity.
So we're really looking at just demand.
Are we looking at the elasticity of demand in, with respect to some measure of the economy? That would be one thing.
Yes, we are.
However, the numbers then would suggest the opposite of what you just said. It would suggest that, in fact, it's rail that's more elastic. At any rate, I think I'm going to get all the information I'm going to get on that one now. I just point that it suggests that this is fairly precarious. I mean, you know, one thing, just to make one observation, this crisis we're in is the result of basically a couple of percent fall off in rail ridership. And that's what you've got here, really, is comparing to last year. You know, you're talking about 2% change in rail ridership. I understand what that means. We're at historically high levels of ridership. I mean, we had an unbroken run for the longest time of increases to dramatically higher levels than you would have had 10 years ago. And we've really only had a slight fall off. Even given the tremendous impact on the economy, it's a small change, and it precipitates a crisis. Because that's how closely the budget is balanced. Now, in part, that's the way government runs, because we have to be balanced, and everyone wants us to have any extra money. So it tends to be that way, which is why all governments are suddenly in trouble with even a slight turnout. But this is particularly precarious, and we're talking about getting through the end of the year. So I do think we have to be concerned that, you know, this forecast, as dire as it is based on a fairly optimistic assumption in one respect, at least. Secondly, even in the budget action plan, is that where it was? Yes, there's this line in there that says, if necessary, use the reserve fund balance up to $5.6 million. So, you know, we're talking about just barely trying to escape the year under any option we're looking at here. And we know we have the tough one ahead of us. So let me ask you about some of the specific things that are in here. In the reduced ridership, did you look at all at the ridership patterns by line? So in other words, we have the gross figures that you're reporting on what on the rail system. Have we looked at whether there are any patterns across the lines?
We have. We did look, as we built the forecast, we did look at the patterns by line, but I don't have that information readily available to the board right now, but we can provide it.
Perhaps obvious question that I'm sure would occur to many is the red line performing differently than the rest of the system? That actually might be the basis for a more optimistic forecast on the rail side if much of the decline was post-accident and, you know, that's a unique
Well, I can
occurrence.
Say that most of the, a lot of the decline on the red line in July and August was significant, and we had reported to the board those numbers. I don't, maybe Jim has them now, but that erosion has leveled off. And Jim, if you have the numbers.
When we looked at it by line, the rail ridership by line, we looked at it by line. We also looked at it by time of day, weekend and weekend. And in the beginning of this fiscal year, the red line was much different reactions than any other line. And it is still has a higher drop than the other lines, but not necessarily overly significant by a couple of percent. And that's part of what we think will come back as our service becomes more reliable. It's pretty much across the board. A little bit more on some line, but you're talking about a difference of maybe 1 or 2% change. It's more of a change on weekends, more of a change on off-peak and evenings, and that may be some of the economic things, too.
What did ridership on the orange line look like?
Ridership on the orange line was down. Again, I don't have the exact number in front of me, but it is down a little bit less than the system-wide average. Again, we'll have to get you those numbers.
If ridership is down, would you expect to see crowding conditions lessen?
Yes.
Do you think that's what you're seeing in our system?
No.
No, not on a regular basis. There's
so if ridership is down, then crowding is not. What does that tell us?
If it's significantly off, where the ridership is significantly down, let's say of a much higher percentage point, and the crowding is still there, then there's something wrong in the way from a fare collection or counting a passenger standpoint. With the differences of a 2% reduction, you know, if you look at a rail car for every 100 people that would be in there, there's two less people in that vehicle. And that's difficult to judge, you know, that there's a significant difference in the crowding. It depends upon the percentage.
Except that the thing about congestion is that it rises very steeply at critical points, which also means it drops off very steeply at critical points, which is why when gas prices went very high, all of a sudden the roads seemed a whole lot less crowded, even though traffic was down a relatively little amount. Same principle applies here. I think we're observing significant crowding relatively unchanged, as far as I can tell, with reduced ridership, and that you seem to confirm that. I would think that that suggests something else. I would think that that suggests that our capacity has actually been constrained, that in effect, we can't deliver people as efficiently now as we could a year ago when we had a couple of percent higher ridership. I would surmise that that reflects manual train operation. But in any case, it seems something to look at very closely. It has a number of implications for our choices here in the longer term, and hopefully not too long term, if I'm right. That would suggest we need to really work to get back to automatic train operation. But in the immediate short term, it would suggest to me that anything we do to degrade service quality is likely to cycle back on us. That it's not simply that we have, you know, excess capacity out there, so restricting a little will reduce cost and move the same number of people. It suggests to me that we're precisely in a situation in which if we do something like go from 8-car trains to 6-car trains, crowding's gonna get worse, the experience of passengers will be worse, and we will drive some of them away, which of course will reduce our revenue, which will have us back here looking at how we come up with more funds to close a gap. And that makes me question the approach that we have in the proposal that's before us. Before I pass it on, Mr. Chairman, for all my concerns about the service side, and I have only scratched the surface with my concerns about the service side, but I'm relieved that, as you've announced, we're going to be giving the public some opportunity to have input and therefore opportunity for a little more analysis of all this. The fact is the service changes are a small part of this package. They're a little more than 10% of it. The bulk of it affects the capital and maintenance side. We have $12 million proposed in parts capitalization, an alternate that would bring that to $16 million, and $10 million in preventive maintenance. I haven't seen analysis of exactly what that means. Tell me about parts capitalization. What is that?
Mr. Zimmerman, if I can interrupt just a second. I think that's a question that's on all of our minds, and the general manager does have details in terms of the preventative maintenance projects and the impact in terms of the future. Do you have that in writing for us today, Mr. Cato? Well, let's have this.
Just general description.
Right. Well, but I think some of, I mean, I'd like to have a very specific description.
Sure.
Because otherwise we're going to be talking about general rhetorical flourishes about how our capital needs are going to be injured and so on and so forth. And with that very much in mind, I'd ask the general manager to have some very specific information for us. Do you have that specific information that can be orally conveyed to us?
I can give you an example of what we're looking to capitalize. For example, on our rail cars, we've got our power truck assemblies. Within the truck assembly has a traction motor, a gearbox. Typically, those items are typically matched with the life cycle of the car, or at least up till midlife overhaul. The way that things have previously been done is that they're maintained through the normal operating budget. But since these assets, if we rehab them in a interval time, kind of like what they do on the bus side with their power plant assemblies, you extend the useful life of the asset. If you don't, then basically you approach it into a kind of a run-to-fail mentality, which then incurs and drives your costs up because then you have massive failures. It leads to larger service interruptions. So what we're looking at is like gearbox assemblies, traction motor assemblies, coupler assemblies, large items to capitalize those kind of components to be in a proactive manner to avoid, huge failures.
Well, Mr. Kubitschek, since I think it's relatively clear that we're going to refer these, refer options, we're not sure exactly what the options are in every regard, but that we're going to refer options to public comment in a period of days from now. That will give you the time, Mr. General Manager, to develop very specific information on the preventative maintenance. And I again request that you have that for us so that we have a very good idea. And some of the concepts which are so easy for you to describe, Mr. Kubitschek, for some of us it might be better seeing it in writing so that we can actually understand what's happening.
Yes,
so if we can, let's put that to one side for the moment. Mr. Zimmerman, do you have further questions?
Well, let me just conclude on that to say I'll be very interested in seeing the information that the chairman has requested. My concern is that anything that stretches out that process that Mr. Kubitschek was describing implies that we're going to have problems at some point eventually. I mean, if not, then why are we spending this money in the first place? Presumably, if we don't spend it now, we're going to run into problems at some point later. So I want to see, A, what are the specific impacts and when do they occur? What is what you would project if you spend X dollars less on something now? How much sooner do you run into a problem? What's the nature of that? And B, if we're going to do that to get through a short-term crisis, what is the plan for putting that money back? When does it have to come back in order that you don't wind up in the very problem that Mr. Kubitschek's description suggests? And that is the bulk of what's before us. What we don't want to do is make a decision now that's going to wind up 12 months from now creating a whole other problem, because it's not like people are completely satisfied with the level of performance we have right now in the system. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Zimmerman. Mrs. Hutchins?
I'd like to just follow up one on the prevention piece and the capital shift here, because I think we all want to hear actually what that, those direct impacts are going to be on us, because I think we're going to ask the public for input, but I think the public as well as our stakeholders need to understand the long-term impact as we build actually the 2011 budget, because I think everything that we do here will have a direct impact there. So I agree that I look forward to that. I just wanted to just comment when you when we made the analysis about the ridership impact and how we are working toward our projected changes for this budget, that the short trips are part of that. But doesn't that build in for the long term in our budget because of the options that are now available for our riders? For example, internally in the District of Columbia, do not we lose ridership in places there because they have other bus options there? And that to me is a different user of the rail system and our rail ridership and the fare impact there. We don't have that in the other places. Well,
we don't.
Well, my question is as we are building in your recommendations are trying to take advantage of losses in fare and ridership impact. But yeah. Are they taking that in term of long term, and are we looking forward to building that in long term?
Well, they're taking into account what the impacts are immediately, which will it's in the long term, as Director Zimmerman said. And we need to give you that degree of detail of the impacts if we take these actions. What happens in FY10, and what does that mean for FY11 and beyond? And we need to include that as part of the public information that we pose for the public hearing.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Mrs. Hutchinson. Mr. Benjamin?
As you know, I tend to be something of a stickler for numbers and consistency, so I just want to make sure I understand all the numbers. On page 8, you say that you have a shortfall of $38.8 million. Yet on page 9, you have $40 million worth of solutions for $38.8 million. Does that mean we have at least another $1 million worth of room to not do some of those solutions?
No, as the $38 million is really strictly on revenue, there's a few expenses that make up the $40 million.
Then I start to have some real costs, Ms. Kissel, because there's some real concerns, Ms. Kissel, because I came to you before and pointed out that I'm at least aware of another $5 million of costs that you're not going to incur, and you gave me the same answer. Oh, well, there are just some more costs that we've got. We've written this off against those. So now you're up to 6 or more than 6, and it seems like every time there's one of these inconsistencies, there happen to be some costs that are out there that we don't know about that you've written off about. What's going on?
I'm happy to be transparent, and I can provide you with a document that I have in front of me that shows the forecast and expenditures. The bottom line shows the $2 million, which make up the 40. It's puts and takes in various different categories, salary, fringe, fuel and power savings, up to $15 million, some interest expense that we had indicated, interest expense that we had that we misbudgeted. So when you net all of those line items out, and actually there are only about 8 of them, I can read them to you or provide you this document, it nets out to $2 million. So I'm not, I'm trying to be transparent, it's nothing else.
Plus another 5 beyond that.
No, that is in this.
Well, but there's another 5 that you don't need to spend that you, in fact, are now telling me also needs to have, has expenses that are overrun. So you're telling me there's $7 million in expense overruns that are covered above and beyond all of this.
I don't know what the other $5 million is, Mr. Benjamin, that you're speaking of.
You know that I know what it is, and I can tell you what it is publicly if you would like me to.
I'm saying that if the $5 million is in our salaries and wages, if that's what you're talking about, okay, then that is actually in this analysis here, so we can show you that.
Okay, I would be very happy to see it, but it seems like an awful lot of various things seem to get covered and sort of brushed away, and I feel very nervous about that. I would also notice that when you take a look at the total cost savings that you're proposing, It's 4.6 million, not four, so we got another 600,000 there. So I get a little bit concerned about the numbers, especially when I can't track the numbers down, and I don't understand where they all come from. So that's very concerning to me. I would like to also publicly say exactly what I think Ms. Hutchins said and Mr. Zimmerman said. As we go to any kind of public hearing and ask the public what they would like, it is very easy for any or all of us to just duck behind the capital program and say, oh, if we just take more money out of the capital program and put it in our operating program, we've solved the problem. As a matter of fact, we could take all the money out of the capital program and save all $40 million. No problem. And that's the easy solution for a short term. It is not the kind of solution that we as a board, with a fiduciary responsibility not only to today, but for the future of this system, should be taking very, very lightly. We need to very seriously consider the implications of moving money from our capital program to our operating program, because it's our capital program that pays for the safety improvements we need to make, the rehabilitation that everybody is upset about of things like escalators and elevators, the rehabilitation of our platforms, the replacement of our rail cars, all of the things that we have said we don't have enough money for. And then when we turn around and say, we're going to take even more money out and solve our operating problem, thereby making that capital problem worse, that's something we as board members have to take very seriously. And it's one of the things that I know it's going to be the kind of answer that people will move to in public hearings. They need to understand, as I think both Ms. Hutchins and Mr. Zimmerman said, that there are implications of doing that.
Right. And let me just add, Mr. Benjamin, that is, I don't know whether you heard what I said, but I asked Mr. Cato earlier this week in meetings that we had that I wanted very specific information in terms of the preventative maintenance, both in terms of its short and long-term impact. So I think we have a general agreement on this issue. And I've had these preventative maintenance strategies described to me, but I think they should be reduced to writing so that we can all examine them and comment.
If I may, Mr. Graham, I agree with you completely, and I very much appreciate the fact that you've asked for these and the fact that the board will get them and we will be able to take that into consideration as we move forward is important. But I think it's also important for the people that we may ask to comment on this publicly to understand that. And just because the documents come to us doesn't mean that the general impact of this type of a policy becomes publicly known.
And once again, we have no disagreement. We have no disagreement. It was very much with the public review of this in mind that I asked for this, not today, but 2 days ago, and which I repeated today. And on the other hand, I think, recognizing what you've said, I think that it may be possible to see some preventative maintenance strategies which will avoid certain amount of service reductions, and we're duty-bound, in my opinion, to consider that, if it's a responsible course of action to take. And so, Mr. Cato, I was half expecting you to have this today, but since you didn't, we can have this prepared, distributed to the board, and available should these options be referred for public comment. So further discussion, Mr. McKay, then Mr. Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't want to belabor the last point, but I will associate myself with concerns with the maintenance issues that are on this list, to say the least, in parts capitalization. We got a lot of work to do to regain the trust of our riders from a safety standpoint, from a reliability standpoint, and frankly, it'll take a lot of convincing for me to see that any of those cuts don't further exacerbate those concerns for our passengers. I want to go back to the mayor's first questions about personnel for a moment, because when I look at presentation and then I look at this attachment B, what I see on here related to rail service reductions is a total personnel impact of 101 positions, and I'm trying to understand, in that 101 positions, is the savings from that reflected in the bus and rail service reductions of $4 million, or is some of that reflected in the departmental reductions of $2.2 million, and how is that broken out?
Those positions are That's actually in the bus and rail, the 103 that you're seeing. That's in the 4 million. The additional 60 that I had mentioned earlier are the departmental reductions in the 2.2.
So of the $4 million in bus and rail service reductions, there's 101 positions, which accounts for how much of the $4 million, how much of the $4 million is in positions versus in other operational savings?
I think most of, majority of it is in positions. 75% are in positions.
It's more than half. On the rail side, there's a great proportion in propulsion costs. On the bus side, it's more on the labor costs. So it's probably 60% of it is from a laborer, and the rest of it is in propulsion and some other minor details.
So positions that have nothing to do related to propulsion that are on here are... Do we know what that accounts for in the rail savings? Because clearly there are positions here that have nothing to do with that. So I'm trying to get a better handle on this rail savings amount here. What is the real savings that we're generating from operational efficiencies?
Try to answer your first question. The propulsion cost is an electric cost. So if we don't run cars, that's why it's not a position cost. It's an electric bill.
Right.
And it's a huge portion of the rail side. In terms of what percent, I missed your last question.
What is the dollar amount in savings related to efficiencies versus the dollar amount savings related to personnel? I heard 3/4, but I want to hear that in a dollar amount so that I'm clear.
I think it's, if our overall subsidy reduction in the efficiencies is $4 million, It's probably closer to $2.5 million of it is labor and benefits that go with that, and the rest of it is in other, mostly propulsion. I have to get the breakdown for you, but that's an estimate.
Okay, so the 101 positions equates to $2.5 million.
The 1.5 is only on rail. There's a number on bus too. But yes.
Okay.
Mr. Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. General Manager, I'm not sure who's best to answer this question, but I don't know if the page numbers coincide with the slide presentation, but slide 5, which talks about the other service providers around the country, San Francisco, Chicago, and New York. It's kind of a two-part, and depending on one of the answers I get, maybe a three-part question, is first, did all these jurisdictions, are they also having passenger declines on ridership?
Yes. In fact, there was a Wall Street Journal article on January the 2nd that talked about ridership decreases around the country. And almost every transit system in the country is experiencing loss from 2 to, in some cases, 7 or 8%.
What is the question is, in theory, what is the answer in theory on why that's happening? Is it there are less people in the workforce because of high unemployment rates? Is it because possible fare increases have kept people away? What is the reason for why ridership is down around the country?
Well, the majority has been attributed to the economy itself. The fare increases occurred as a reaction to the drop in the ridership because the revenues there was lower revenues coming into those transit agencies. And so the reaction of the fare increase was a reaction to a reduction in fares coming in. So it's attributed, according to the article, primarily to the economy.
And then the next step on the fare increase, because frankly, 2 of the 3 did do fare increases. I mean, I'm sure some passengers, when you eliminate the reduced fares, they consider that a fare increase. 2 of those 3 did fare increases. Did they notice then that there was slippage after that? Or did they not lose customers for an additional quarter or 30 cents or whatever?
I do not have that degree of detail for those specific agencies, but there is some drop-off in ridership in most cases on the bus side if you have fare increases. We did not experience that with the last fare increase for the rail side. There was no elasticity.
And you mentioned you don't have any real scientific evidence, but is there, when there either is a fare increase or someone decides to get to work another way, whether it's walking or most people go back to their cars and just drive in, or how do they determine how they're going to get to their workplace or run their errands or whatever they decide to do?
Well, if all factors are stable, you have the variables are just that you did a fare increase, and the economy has not changed, so there's not a drop in jobs. And if people come off of a transit system, there's a combination of things they do, walk, bike, carpool, or drive in single-occupant vehicles. All of those things occur. But if you have a recession, particularly one as deep as the one we're going through, then most of the impact is because of job loss.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Is there further discussion? Mr. Mariel?
Yeah, just for clarification, and again, we're all harking on this parts capitalization, preventive maintenance, but because those are two items, line items that are, you know, very important for all the reasons that have already been expressed. But just in terms of clarification, are we, with regards to those two line, two particular line items, are we capitalizing some of these as expenses? And, you know, is there a drastic change here in accounting? In other words, are we moving from the choice to capitalize them? Are we changing, are we moving them from one side of the ledger as operating expenses?
Yeah, parts capitalization actually is, it's a gap measure, so we're actually expensing those items. We actually are doing that now. We're using operating costs, so that's how we're actually funding those parts capitalization. What we're looking to do is actually capitalize it using capital dollars, and as a result, that kind of amortizes that asset over a certain period of time. So it goes on the other side of the ledger, as you had indicated.
Thank you.
You know, I think it would be interesting for me, and perhaps for others, as we look at our other transit systems, our sister transit systems, to see how they have used their preventative maintenance dollars and in the same type of strategy. Can you gather some information on that for us?
We have that information, and it's going to be a wide range. You're going to have systems like New Jersey Transit that uses a very high percentage of its capital dollars for preventative maintenance, and other systems which are going to be on the lower end. But yes, we can get some of the larger systems and get that information to you.
I just, by way of information that we can incorporate into our submission, I just have one other point.
Okay.
On behalf of the District of Columbia, I do want to express concern about the mezzanine closings. It's a savings of just about, a total savings of about $873,000, but the District of Columbia is disproportionately impacted. Eight of the 10 weekend mezzanine closures are in D.C., and four of the five weekday closures are in D.C., and so we would want to, and I'm sure people who comment on this in the public comment session, you know, will call attention to this, but we get 80% of the impact, but of course the savings that we would result, according to our formulas, is much less, down to about 40%. So this is of concern to us. It's not a great deal of money, but for people who have to walk several blocks, and you know, U Street comes to mind. U Street is not a block apart. U Street, the two mezzanines, or the two exits and entrances, are about three blocks apart. And particularly when you consider that closing in connection with Howard University Shaw, which, you know, is also, we're also calling there in this recommendation for a mezzanine closing. And so the two together disadvantage a neighborhood which is very close to my heart. And so you know I'm going to comment on this right away. But I do want to register that concern on behalf of the District of Columbia. Mr. Benjamin?
I did want to acknowledge Mr. Graham and Mr. Cato that many transit systems, in fact, do a substantial amount of capitalization of operating funds by doing preventive maintenance and parts capitalization. As a matter of fact, some have done it to the point that they have no capital program left at all. And there are many general managers and chief financial officers throughout the country who decry the fact that they don't have today a capital program because people years ago started this process of capitalizing operating costs. That's what we're trying to avoid in this authority, because there will be people here after those of us who are here in this room today have left who we have a responsibility to, and there's a public we have a responsibility to.
Thank you very much. May I ask for a motion, please, to refer option 1 on page 9 and option 2 on page 10 with new details, which will be provided. That may I have a motion, please, to refer this to public comment? Okay, so moved. Is there a second? Thank you. Now on the motion to refer these two options for public comment, I believe that under the compact we do have time sufficient to have a 15-day notice of a public comment and also be able to act final on these matters on the 28th of January, which is our scheduled board meeting. Am I right or am I wrong? No.
You just turned it off again.
Okay, sorry. None of these matters require a compact public hearing, so the board can determine the amount of time and the time of the public comment.
Right, but in the spirit of being guided by the spirit of the compact requirements, even though they're not applicable fully to this situation, we do have enough time to give a good notice, hold a public hearing, and also be back for a final decision on this on the 28th of January. Am I right or am I wrong?
You are correct. We can give 15 days notice and have a hearing before the board meeting.
Okay, thank you. Is there discussion on the motion? Discussion on the motion, Mr. Zimmerman?
Mr. Chairman, as it's currently presented, I can't support the motion. I do very much support going to public hearing, and that would be my first requirement for anything that's before us personally. But I have a problem with the options, which really is one option with a slight variation, which I think is entirely wrongheaded. Essentially, the approach is to do a little damage to current service and a lot of damage to future service. If we were going to even do this way, if we were going to say we wanted $4 million or $5 million in service cuts, I think we should be looking at different ways of approaching that, and we're not even considering them. For instance, on the rail side, we have two major components, one of which hurts peak service, which for reasons I explained earlier, I think we can't afford to do. The other hurts off-peak service by widening headways to a point where the rail system will become not really a good option for people doing off-peak travel. 30-minute headways are just nonsensical on a system that we have spent so much money on, and yet when people are looking at trips and off-peak times, that means with any kind of connections they have to make, their journeys will become entirely unpredictable, at which point they might as well choose their cars. And we are talking about the choice riders in those times. I don't understand why, for instance, we're not looking at some changes that would affect the span of service rather than just headways. Now, let me say, I'm somebody who thinks we ought to have a rail system running 24 hours a day. I understand the reasons why we can't, and I pushed hard to run it for as long as we could. But I would rather have good service 19, 20, 21 hours a day than lousy service 22 hours a day or 23 hours a day. I mean, at the margin, if we're holding on to run the system that much longer but making it poor service throughout the day, then that probably won't make economic sense for us, and it doesn't make good sense for riders either. If you give me good service for some limited span of time, at least I have the option of moving my travel to those times and knowing with some reliability that I can get where I'm going in a reasonable amount of time. So, you know, I don't understand why those aren't options we're even looking at. On the bus side, we've got proposed reductions in some of the best performing routes we have. I mean, the one I know best is the route in Virginia, which is the number one bus route that exists. And I ride it to get here. So I know people are standing in the aisles when they get to the station. Why would we be looking at increasing the headways on a route like that? I also know that it was planned to coordinate with the train arrival. So if you change that, presumably you're going to mess that up too. Why are we looking at that and not looking at other proposals, for instance, more significant efforts to rationalize bus routes. There's a little bound to bus stop consolidation that amounts to very little dollars, as you can see. But if we look more seriously at bus stop consolidation, restructuring routes by eliminating some wandering segments that make a lot of our routes expensive to run and not very reliable or efficient for passengers, and if we actually put on the table some places where we could save time for the passengers and save money in our running the bus service by things like queue jumpers or some key places, you know, asking departments of transportation to provide priority for the bus, we might be able to save money and produce as good or better service for our passengers, but we're not really looking at that. And finally, I have had many people come up to me, including just last night, who have been reading about this stuff and saying, look, I can't have you cutting this service. I depend on this. I don't want to pay more, but I'd rather pay a little more in a fare than have not have the service available to me. Now, you know, I don't know offhand, but I'll bet they could tell us what a surcharge of 10 cents or 20 cents for the last 4 months would bring in. But I don't know why we're not even giving the public the option to tell us they'd rather pay an extra dime or so and get through this year without having the service damaged. It seems to me that's the kind of option that ought to be on the table. People could decide not to take it, but why do we not give them that option? How many things are there out there now? I mean, we are paying more for something, for all kinds of things, because costs drive them up, and in many cases, it's better for us to pay it than not to have the option. I don't know why we're not putting that before the public. So, Mr. Chairman, I would be interested in seeing an amendment to the motion that would provide additional options that included some real changes to the way service is approached, and also put an option on for a fare surcharge that would apply for, say, the last 4 months of the year and would give us the potential to not damage service now or service in the future.
Well, Mr. Zimmerman, I think that, you know, speaking just for myself, I mean, I would favor additional options, you know, to be presented for public comment. And so, but I do think there is an urgency to act. We had this special meeting, and so maybe if we can have, you know, what you suggest, I don't have any problem with any of the points that you've made, you know, and have this drafted as part of the notice for public comment, we could certainly do that. But I think there's an urgency in terms of the financial situation of the authority to move as quickly as possible, but I think all of the things, if somebody wishes to craft a motion along that line to add these options, I think that would be, it would be very acceptable to me. Ms. Shula.
Okay. I go back to aligning myself with the comments of Mr. Benjamin in terms of, and actually Mr. Zimmerman and Ms. Hudgens, in terms of being careful about the using capital, because we do have this responsibility. We do have fiduciary duties, and yet and still we have to do something. None of these options is something we can jump for joy about, to be frank. So, but we have to do something. And at the public hearings that I've attended in Prince George's County, these service cuts are very problematic. Yet we have to, so we have to do something. If we don't do service cuts, then, you know, I'm not a big believer in using the capital either. The people that spoke there, many of them indicated that they would rather have, they're not jumping for joy, but they would rather have some semblance of a fare increase than to have their service cuts. They need to be able to get to work. They'd rather pay more to get to work than not be able to get there at all. And some of these cuts have very drastic implications for Prince George's County, and I'm sure other jurisdictions. So I, for one, would support looking at these other options that Mr. Zimmerman proposed and having them be a part of the public hearing. And I don't know that you need a separate motion. Can't the motion maker and seconder just accept that? As
we could. We could.
Okay.
I construe this to be that we would present for public comment, Mr. Cato, the option of some type of fare increase for a period of time in this fiscal year, probably at the end of the fiscal year. Would it be, is it legally and technically possible to do that? Because we don't want to put out an idea that has that we cannot implement.
Is it on now? Okay. We have the requirement of a 15-day notice with two newspaper insertions. The second insertion can be within the 15-day period. So I'm not familiar enough with the timing for inserting in the publications to know whether we can meet the compact requirements. I would defer to the Office of Secretary.
We would have to get add to the papers today by 2 p.m. is the deadline for it to run this Saturday. If not, we'll have to wait until next week.
And Mr. Chairman, I have a motion.
And Mr. Zimmerman has a motion.
I move that the motion before us be amended to include direction to the general manager that the options to be advertised include additional alternatives that would include A, variations in span of service as alternatives to headway adjustments, B, additional alternatives for bus route rationalization, and C, a fare surcharge option with, I will pick a number, up to 20 cents across all services, rail and bus and corresponding charges, to be implemented for the final months of the fiscal year. I say up to because you could then presumably pick a number that made some sense.
Well, I don't, it's been seconded by Mrs. Hutchins. You know, I think you might want to say for the final months of the year, of course, would be every month between now and the 30th of June. But I think, could we say for the final 4 months?
Yeah, I was actually trying to leave it open because I didn't know how quickly you can implement it. So,
right. Well,
but that was what I had in mind.
But yes. It's the notion of presenting an option for discussion, which would have some kind of fare surcharge for in this fiscal year, FY10.
Correct.
As another option.
And I specified a number because I assumed that that would be necessary for advertising purposes.
I think that's fine. So, is this legally and technically sufficient?
May I have a clarification, Mr. Chair?
Right.
Was the intent to have this additional surcharge only for those 4 months? We need to know this for the notice.
Yes, that was my intention. I assume we're only going to have a larger discussion about what fares should be in conjunction with the next year's budget.
Do we have to indicate the amount of money that we're thinking of?
Yes, we do.
We do.
If we're going to have a fare increase, yes.
So the up to, just one second, the up to 20 cents would satisfy that?
Yes.
All right. In all modes of transportation, I heard you say that. And again, this is for public discussion. This is for public discussion. Mrs. Hutchin, then Mr. McCarron.
I just wanted to clarify how you would present it so that the public would have, the writers would have the clarity. So it would be up to, but it would show breakdowns as to the fare cost of the fare amount and the recovery revenue.
If we have to get all of this detail done by 2 o'clock, we can show, it will have some degree. We just show 20 cents on every category. And then it's after the hearing, should the board decide to do it, it can modify it anyway once.
If that works, then that's okay.
Mr. McKay?
Yeah, I just want to get a better understanding of the 20 cents figure. Do we have any off-the-wall idea of how much of the shortfall would be taken care of by that? I'm looking for some balance here because I'd sure hate for us to ask our riders to increase fares absent a lot of the other things that are in this package that are not service reductions. So do we have any idea how much of the service reduction amount could be funded by a fare increase and what that fare increase amount would be?
Well, you know, off the top of my head, I can't give you the answer. To tell you, the service reduction component could be eliminated as a result of the fare increase, but to know exactly what those numbers are, I'm just really guesstimating. We have those numbers and the different types of scenarios. I don't think we had a scenario where everything was 20 cents.
Right.
So I have to look at it, but it would, I know it would take care of the service.
Okay. I just want to be clear to the public for the purposes of the public hearing that it's not the 20 cents that's needed to solve all of the service reductions. It may be a figure much less than that, but it's just the subject that we're talking about, and we don't know the actual figure. I don't want anyone walking away from here thinking we have to add 20 cents to the fare for every service in order just to solve the service reductions that are in this recommendation, because that's not the case. And I guess my only question is, on page 11, where we had the town hall comments, I associate myself with the comments of Mr. Zimmerman, because it was clear at the Virginia hearing that there was openness to fare increases to solve the larger metro budget problems in the next fiscal year. And I just am wondering why that was not recognized in the town hall comments, because it was a pretty clear comment that we got, at least in Virginia. And I guess we're here today having that not be an option brought forward by the staff because it's not reflected in the town hall comments, and it very much was in the Virginia comments. So I don't know why it wasn't included in this slide, but for the people that I represent in Virginia and the people who came to that public hearing, they clearly wanted the option for fare increases on the table.
Let me ask a question, because I think you have raised a very good issue, Mr. McKay. Would it be acceptable, in order to gain a consensus on this matter, that we would have a fare increase, but we could mention a specific number? I'm not sure the 20 cents is the right number, but that we make it clear that it's a fare increase or a surcharge sufficient to eliminate any service reduction that would be proposed.
Mr. Chairman?
So that we wouldn't have a situation where we were having a fare increase or surcharge that exceeded that particular element.
Yeah, that is not what I'm proposing at all.
Right.
Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, I'm just, yes, please.
I think we're trying to craft out the details that we would like the public to opine on, and I'm not sure we can do that today, but I think the motion that's on the table is trying to put a latitude that would be sufficient enough to publicly advertise. I think the details should be coming back in the public meeting, prior to the public meeting. That is, the question you've raised as to the numbers and what do they cover and would they eliminate service reductions, et cetera. So I think what we'd like to send out is an option of a fare increase amongst the other things we have here. And that way people will know that that's one of the things they could speak to, but the information to the public would then provide the greater latitude of detail of what do those numbers offer in what types of reductions and what amounts of revenue. Mr. Chairman, is that what you can give us?
Yes. I understand exactly what you're asking for. We do not have that degree of specificity right now. To get to the up to 20%, this means 20 cents, there's some number in between.
Okay.
Our estimates are, and this again, this is very quick, 10 cents would give you 8 million over the 4-month period of time with no elasticity. That's our numbers. But again, we need to do a little bit more planning. I don't want to give that as a firm number here today, right at this moment. We need to have people go upstairs and start working on it.
Okay. Well, are you saying, let me just be clear about this. You believe that a 10-cent fare surcharge would produce $8 million in revenue over what period of time?
The last 4 months of this budget year.
So it would... A 10-cent surcharge on all modes of our transportation would produce $8 million in new revenue for the last 4 months of FY10. Is that correct?
Yes, but it does not include elasticity. So you do not have, you do not understand what riders you will lose
right.
If you have the price fare increase. And it's a very ballpark order of magnitude.
But the elasticity problem would be greater the higher the fare increase. Right, so I think I'm concerned about the extent to which we needlessly are going to aggravate people by a fare increase discussion which exceeds what our needs are. And so it might be better actually to put this out as an up to 10 cents in all modes of transportation. And see what the public reaction is to that, since that would produce a significant portion of the monies that we're looking for to fill the FY10 gap.
Mr. Chairman.
Let's see if we can have... our numbers are dwindling here, but we have others. Mr. McKay, Ms. Hewlett.
I was asking a question so that those responding in the public hearing were clear on what they were responding for and what certain things would pay for. And, you know, service reductions is one piece of it, but I'd also be interested in hearing from them if a part of their fare increase that they were willing to not defer maintenance issues, that they were willing to not do parts capitalization, that they were not willing to do other things here. I think the service reductions will be paramount on their mind, but I think safety and preventative maintenance is paramount on their mind too. And so for me, at least, knowing that it's 10 cents is good, but I'd like us to advertise a higher amount just for the purpose of discussion so that we know who among our riders is concerned also about covering other costs. I mean, the definition of needs that was used is different when you ask every rider what they define as needs. And to me, deferring preventative maintenance is a need, and I think we should ask our riders if that's a need also. Knowing that it's 10 cents is good, asking them if they'd be willing to pay 20 cents to cover some other expenses related to our budget shortfall, I think, is a responsible thing to do, and I think is what we should do.
Ms. Hewlett.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think that I, too, think it has to be a higher amount, up to 20%. I mean, up to 20 cents, excuse me, up to 20 cents. And because, first of all, Ms. Kissel indicated that that was a rough estimate. I mean, they just did that very quickly, so it's an estimate, so I'm not sure that 10 cent works. And secondly, for the reasons Mr. McKay just indicated, that we do need to have input from our customers about what needs need to be addressed. And thirdly, I think we have the press here, and we have people here. It's our job to go ahead and make sure that everyone knows that this is not, we're not proposing a 20 cent increase, but that it really is up to, and we need your help too to help convey that to everyone, that it's up to, just so that we can wrap our hands around this problem and address it. It may not need to be 20 cents, may not need to be near 20 cents, but I think that if we articulate it properly and get the word out to our customers, they will understand that we're not advocating a 20 cent increase, but that we are allowing for whatever it is that we need, and we will have the information within the 2 weeks. Plus, we got to hurry up because we have 2 hours and 15 minutes to get this in the press, to get this notice in. So I don't think we can fool around anymore, and I think it's an imperative option to put on the table.
Further discussion, I would like to propose that we have a 10 cent rather than the 20 cent on all modes of transportation being put out as our proposal. And I don't know what level of amendment we're at this point. I think this might be, maybe we could, are we permitted to have that as an amendment?
I'm sorry.
To the amendment. I'm asking that we make it 10 cents rather than 20 cents.
Oh, well.
For
your discretion.
I mean, I would like a vote on my motion. I think that is a mistake to try and tailor this thing to the point where you're making the decision. Part of what we're hearing from the public is that the public wants to have real choices, not to have something that's already crafted and effectively a fait accompli. I want to put 20 cents out there mostly so we know there's a full range of options. You might decide to go with zero. At the end of this, you might decide you don't want to do a fare surcharge. But I want something that's broad enough that people actually know that there are real choices here and that it's not a foregone conclusion. And I think that to tie our own hands, because you can go down, but you can't go up. So to tie our hands by only putting out 10 cents that you are likely not to have a sufficient option for the things before us, I think would be a big mistake.
Ms. Hewlett. Ms. Hutchins, I'm sorry.
Mr. Chairman, I think that the process that we've moved to today, short of where we were when we left here, is to ensure that we had public input. And if we're going to have public input, we want the public to be informed and give them the latitude to inform us as well as we make the final. We're still responsible for the final decision here, but I don't want to go out there and limit what information they have available to them, as well as what knowledge we need to have in terms of what all options are there. I think Mr. McKay said it quite well. People did share with us what some of their options were, and I think we need to give them the opportunity to see what it means, and if it works, then we can come back and make decisions on it. Otherwise, Anything short of that, I think we're not allowing them to be full participants.
Further discussion? What percentage of increase would this be for the three modes? Can somebody quickly figure that? If it was to be 20 cents?
But that's not the motion. It's up to 20
cents. I'm simply asking a question. Because, I mean, to respond, I think that the media tomorrow, we're going to have in the media a 20-cent possible increase in the fares of Metro Ramada. That's the way this will play. I just want to know what the percentage is.
Again, it's going to take us a few minutes to do that, because if it's across the board, then you're looking at every different fare.
Well, this is not difficult.
It's 10%, about 10% on the minimum fare of the $1.25. And on the long-distance fare, it's capped at 4. It's 20%.
20%.
Thank you.
20%.
20%. Excuse me. Thank you. So,
thank you, our Chief Financial Officer.
I know. I apologize.
It's a 20% increase.
That's correct.
So, Mr. Chair, I have a question.
No, that's not
right. Mr. Chair,
I'm just simply asking what this is a factual question. It's not a complex question. Let me restate the question. What is the percentage of increase if there were to be an increase of 20 cents on all modes of transportation? The fares of all modes of transportation? What is the answer to the question?
On bus, the bus fare is $1.25.
Thus, what percentage increase would this be?
Right, so 20, if it was 20 cents, it would be 20% over 20%.
That's not right.
16. I'm sorry, 16%. Excuse me. Thank you.
Okay. And rail? Average rail?
And on average rail is the...
$2. The sum is $2.
The max fare.
Average rail
is
$2.
Right.
It's just under 10% on the rail.
Just under 10% of the rail. And Metro Access?
Metro Access is double the bus fare, so it would be about an 8 or 9% increase.
And we already have a board policy. I just have one more question. We already have a board policy relating to the CPI in terms of fare increases in FY11, do we not?
Yes, we do.
And what amount is that projected to be for FY11?
It's estimated at 6%.
So we have an estimated, if the board policy is implemented, and we all have reason to believe it will be, that we're looking at a 6% increase in fares pursuant to the increases in the CPI for FY11, and that would be over and above what we're now contemplating?
This would only be
for the 4 months. So that this increase, is that clear to you, Mr. Cato?
It's very clear to me, and let me make sure, just one point of clarification. We're talking about bus and rail and paratransit. We're talking about transit fares, not any other expenses. So yes, right. Gotcha.
But is it clear to you that this is only a surcharge that would occur for this fiscal year, and that at the end of the fiscal year, unless this board took other action, this would be eliminated?
Yes, it's clear to me the date on itself we might want to adjust, but yes, we need to go back and do a few analysis, but I understand June 30th, this goes through June 30th max.
And only through June 30th. Okay, that's the proposal, is that correct?
Correct proposal.
Yes, Ms. Hewlett.
Thank you. I would like to follow up on Mr. Chairman Graham's question. He asked what percentage increase this would be if we went with the 20 cent increase, and since the motion was up to a 20 cent increase, are you prepared to address what the increase would be if it were 1 cent, 2 cent, 3 cent, 4 cent, up to 19, since we already have 20? Okay. Well, and I don't really want to belabor the point, because you don't have enough time, because we got to get with the notice requirements. You have 2 hours, but the point is the motion is up to 20 cents. So by that time, we will have some information to put out to the public. And I think it's very, very clear. The motion is very, very clear that we're talking up to 20 cents. up to 20 cents. I know Mr. Graham indicated that the press might have it, it might be reported differently tomorrow. I'm looking at everybody here. I'm hoping that we have it, that it will clearly say up to 20 cents. It may not be 20 cents. It may not be 10 cents. But I hope it's really, really clear that we have to put this option out on the table and allow for input from our customers.
No, it's more than that in terms of what the press writes. It's what we write.
Right.
We stay in the press release.
So, and we got to be about the business of getting it done so that we can write it, so, and we only have 2 hours to get it right.
Yes.
Thank you.
Is there further discussion on the amendment? Further discussion on the amendment? If we're all in favor, hearing no further discussion on the amendment, all those in favor say aye.
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 Those opposed say no. No. The ayes have it, and the amendment is adopted. Is there further discussion on the range of options as amended? Further discussion. Mr. Benjamin?
Just a clarification. Veto does not apply on an amendment.
Mr. Brown seems to have left.
Yeah, he
vanished. Therefore, if we don't have a motion, Mrs. Columbia, I don't believe that the motion is passed.
We need a finding from council.
I'm sorry. You don't have a DC vote, so it doesn't pass.
On the amendment? We had, that was a vote on the amendment.
It's not the motion.
It's a vote on the amendment.
So the question is, does that apply to amendments only?
Well, we now, having raised a legal issue.
I'm sorry, I was getting up to go get the text started, so I've lost track of the proceedings.
Let me explain it to you so we're
absolutely
clear. Thanks
so very much.
Is that Mr. Zimmerman made an amendment calling for a 20 cent increase. Up to a 20%. Wait a minute. Mr. Zimmerman made an amendment which added several new options, I believe three new options for public discussion, one of which was an up to 20 cent increase in fares for all modes of transportation.
Did you vote no on
that? And I voted no.
Well, then it didn't pass.
Even on amendments?
Well, it's no, I mean it's any action by the board, and a motion is an action. So, you've got your amendment that has failed.
Okay, we're bound by our general counsel's ruling. I move to amend the proposal to have an increase up to 10 cents be put out as one of the and the other two options, which I will incorporate in my motion, the other two options which Mr. Zimmerman has asked be included. So discussion on the motion, discussion on the in the amendment. Discussion.
Mr. Chairman, may we take a recess for just 5 or 10 minutes?
A recess?
Mm-hmm.
To do what?
Because I need a recess.
I have to look at our legal counsel to recess.
So you have your main motion. Your main motion is still pending. So.
Well, we have an amendment to the main motion, which is pending.
Correct. The 10-cent amendment.
You can move a recess if you wish to. I guess you can.
Was there a second to your amendment? I'll remember a second.
To the amendment.
Could we at least know whether we have a second to the amendment so we can at least keep that straight before the recess?
Do you
recess?
Want to know whether there's a second to the amendment?
Yeah, I'd like to have that straight before you recess.
Okay, this meeting stands in recess for 5 minutes.
Did you hear?
Bus was 140 million. Rail was, I thought, 180 or 200. It's just under 300 now, but yeah.
So we're talking about
quarter, maybe quarter. A year, divided by a quarter. Bus standalone is $1 million a month. The dime would be $1 million a month on bus. Right. Per month. Well, our question is, can we implement 4 months? You know, it usually takes us 90 days. 9 or 12. And is this a formal public hearing or is this a public meeting? So we could meet our public hearing requirements on bus service.
What do you want to do?
That's part of it. Yeah. I just need to go to the room.
Thank you. showing.
So we can wait for him if we want to. But I mean, it's going to be the same outcome.
Indeed.
Well, I mean, I can make a resolution of what you're doing. So, motion is as I described it,
What would it be? 20%
Maybe it was, well, 20% would be high, 50% would be lower, 50% would not allow us to talk about much higher.
But they're not going to do that. This meeting is called back to order. I note the absence of a quorum, there being only one member. But if I don't call attention to the quorum, I guess somebody has to object to there. Mr. Cato, what would be the impact if rather than using a specific number, if we used a percentage of the fare, what would be the logistical issues, the administration issues in that type of a fare surcharge?
It would make it far more complex on the rail system. Then we would have to do calculations on every segment of the system based upon the distance. And that would make it a lot more complex for the public itself. Mm-hmm. And it would make it a lot more complex for us to be able to put all this information together, prior to publishing the information. This will increase the complexity given the short period of time that we have.
So that is not something that you would be inclined to recommend?
I would not recommend that. Right. I think it just makes it, it's just going to be complex enough.
Right.
That would make it far more complex.
I know you keep arguing. Thank you. This meeting is now in recess until we have the city administrator, Neil Albert, present, and he is on his way.
Isn't that interesting? Well, I guess we're going to be a lot of questions, right? So,
thank you. I'm giving you a forced
Christmas gift of a calculator.
So
one third should be. So one third, though, if everything was perfect, one third would get to 16.
No, you would be here today.
We're using operating money. We have those parts now.
I call to order this special meeting of the Board of Directors of Metro WMATA. Where we left off is that I had made a motion which was identical to that of Mr. Zimmerman's amendment, which would have the two new options and then a third option of a possible fare increase, fare surcharge for the last 4 months of this fiscal year in an amount not to exceed 10 cents. I so move. Is there a second? It's been moved and seconded. Discussion on the amendment. Discussion on the amendment.
Question.
Mr. Zimmerman.
So your amendment is now exactly as mine was that four members voted for, with a change of 20 cents to 10 cents?
That's correct.
Okay, so the maximum now is 10 cents, and you gave an estimate, Mr. Cato, for the revenue, that a rough idea of the revenue that would be raised. I assume that's going to the maximum amount across all the fares at all times. It includes no adjustments, for instance, if you wanted to do peak as different from off-peak, then yes. You whack back from there.
That was a very conservative estimate, and it was based upon that. It was a flat 10%.
Right. In fact, we might decide in the end that some fare surcharge was called for, but we wanted it different on rail or bus. We wanted it different at different times for various reasons. All of that would lead to a reduction in the amount of revenue involved.
Yes.
Okay. Well, as I said, I think that you've restricted the ability that the board would have then to do some things other than what's on the table. And so, although I will say I think this is better than not putting any option of fares before the public, so, you know, I see no alternative but to support it, given that the District of Columbia has apparently chosen to veto any other option. It's better than not having it on there. Nonetheless, it seems inevitable then that an ultimate package, even if it includes the maximum amount of fare advertised, and we don't know what the District of Columbia will choose to veto when that comes around, we will still necessarily have either reductions in service or reductions in preventative maintenance. And I think that that is unfortunate, although it could still be a less damaging package than the one we came in here looking at today.
Further discussion? Mrs. Hutchins?
I find difficulty supporting this, and I find the most difficulty in going out to the public with a lack of clarity of what we're trying to produce. We came in to make an adjustment to the current budget, and what we put on the table is the option of additional revenue to reduce the impact of services as well as to reduce the impact on our capital budget, our preventive maintenance. I think we're being forced in the hand to not give the public the opportunity to actually have some true input into this process. So I think we're all forced to accept less than what could be put made available to us. I think when we have our public hearing, the details will be helpful, but they will still be lacking. And unfortunately, I think we've been locked into a vote situation that won't change that. But I think we need to start actually reflecting what we say about our customers and that they have the capacity to give us good input, and we need to have the opportunity to hear from them fully. And Mr. General Manager, for the public hearing, can we also have additional data beyond the 10 cents that we're talking about?
Additional data?
That is only for the informational purpose. What would be the additional data with above a 10 cents?
Yes, we can do
the
that.
The advertisement, I understand the advertisement. Right. I'm talking about information.
I understand.
Okay. Thank you. I'd like to request that after this motion.
Yes, Mr. McKay.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, if my math is clear, the preventative maintenance piece is $10 million. The bus and rail service reductions is $4 million. That totals $14 million, up to 10 cents if we went to the maximum extent possible, is estimated to generate $8 million, or half of solving those two problems. And frankly, I think it's an enormous mistake for this board to not ask the public, in the atmosphere that we're in, with complaints about service reliability, complaints about safety on this rail system, it is a complete neglect for our riders to not give them the opportunity to come forward and tell us that those two areas are sacred and they don't want cuts to those and they're willing to pay for those. That's clearly what the people in Virginia in the public hearing said about next budget. It's clearly what I hear on a daily basis, and I think it's a shame that we don't have the opportunity to have them come forward and be able to say that, and for this board to actually be able to act on those comments in a reasonable manner. Limiting this to 10 cents does not give us the ability to do that, and that's a shame.
Further discussion? Ms. Hewlett?
Thank you. And thank you for that information, Mr. McKay. If your numbers are correct, you said $14 million, so we're basically, with the up to 10 cent, we're asking for our customers to choose between the service cuts and perhaps not being able to get to work at all or safety. They have to make a choice, essentially. So, because it will only address half of those two things combined, if you, in fact, go up to the 10 cent. So I too, would like to echo the comments of everyone else who's spoken and that I regret that we are putting this cap and not really giving options to our customers or viable options to our customers, but be that as it may, apparently it is what it is.
Further discussion? Well, let me say, just so that we're clear about what we're doing here, we are proposing, if this amendment passes, to put five options before the public. And several of those options do involve a preventative maintenance, a use of capital dollars for preventative maintenance. We did not have before us even, we did not have before us even though I had requested it. Did you hear that bit? Even though I had requested it 2 days ago, the specifics as to the preventative maintenance strategy. So that is still somewhat of a pig in a poke. We don't know whether that's going to involve safety. We don't know what it involves. And I have asked the general manager to identify what the specific preventative maintenance expenditures would be, and we will have that for the public hearing, which will be held within the next 2 weeks. And so we don't know what it is at the present time, and I'm going to restrain myself insofar as suggesting that using some amount of money in preventative maintenance from the capital budget is going to have a very adverse impact. It might, but once we see the details, we'll be able to draw that judgment. In addition, this motion confirms, you know, and is compatible with the point of view that I have had as a member of this board now in my 12th year, which is that we should not needlessly agitate the riding public over our proposals. And the fact of the matter is that I am absolutely convinced, others will disagree with this, that the notion of there being as great a fare increase as 20 cents would agitate people. beyond the needs that we currently have. It, whether it be $8 million, $6 million, $10 million, whatever it is clear that a four-month surcharge of up to 10 cents, or 10 cents specifically, would cover the needs that we have insofar as our service cuts, which have generated a great deal of public comment. I've received it, others have received it. And I think going to the public and saying, we want to contemplate the possibility of a tailored fare increase that meets our immediate needs, that meets our immediate needs, when we know in FY11 we're going to have to consider all manner of issues in order to close the budget gaps in that time for that budget year. So I think, you know, I respect there are other points of view that have been expressed here, but I think, you know, this is as far as I'm willing to go, and other members from D.C. can speak, but I think this is a responsible course of action in presenting five options for public discussion. This is bound to provide some very, very stimulating and contributing public comment, which we can then reassemble as a board on the 28th of January and make the final decisions. Is there further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor of the amendment say aye. Aye. Opposed, no. The amendment carries. We are now on the main motion, which is to present, unless you want to have a show of hands. All right. All those in favor of the amendment signify by raising your right hand. Well, it's up to you. You don't have to. Okay. Well, it's reluctant, but it's still a raised hand. That's five in favor. Those opposed signify by raising your right hand. Those abstaining signify by raising your right hand. So by a vote of five in favor, zero against, one abstention, the amendment carries. We are now on the main motion, which is to provide these five options for public comment as rapidly as possible, with notice being given before 2 o'clock to meet our various requirements. Am I right, Ms. O'Keefe?
Yes, you are. May I raise one technical issue? The board adopted a resolution in 1996, 96-51, that sets procedures for compact public hearing. One of them requires for bus service changes or fare increases that the public record be maintained open for 5 days after the public hearing. We will not have enough time to do that, and I would ask that the board waive that requirement for this particular public
so
hearing.
So moved, Mr. Chairman.
It's been moved. Is there a second?
Second.
It's been moved by Mr. Zimmerman and seconded by Mr. Benjamin that we waive the requirement that the public hearing record remain open for 5 days following the hearing for additional comments. So discussion on the amendment. Hearing none, all those in favor say aye. Aye. Opposed, no. The ayes have it, and that amendment is passed. Now we have the main motion before us as amended twice. Is there further discussion? Further discussion? All those in favor say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The ayes have it. The motion is passed by unanimous vote. Now we have one matter of business, which is the response to Senator Mikulski.
Mr. Chair. Before we get to that, I have a
comment.
Mr. Zimmerman.
Okay. An item that it was not on the agenda but was presented to us with a resolution concerned adoption of rules and regulations for Metro Rail service reductions. And I first have the question of when was that to be addressed, or it seems that the staff wanted us to act on this resolution.
What are you referring to?
The resolution that's before us at our places that says adoption of rules and regulations for Metro Rail service reductions.
I think I can help clarify that. We either needed a specific approval from the board to make the changes, or we needed approval of a policy that would grant certain authority within the general manager. Since you're moving it all to a public hearing, we don't need that now. So, but that's why it was in there.
Okay. The rail, this only just rail service. And do I infer correctly that this is because you were relying upon regulations for things previously approved by the board, procedures approved on the bus side? You don't have something parallel on the rail side, because although the board at one point directed those to be developed, they never were?
The bus ones have been developed and approved by the board on a couple of occasions. The board has never been given or adopted anything on the rail side.
Okay. Well, this may be moot, Mr. Chairman, but I do want to say I'd raise the question about why certain things required hearing on the rail side but not on the bus side, and the answer has to do with actions that have been taken in the past that relate to these very rules. This is moot, but had it been before us, I would have rejected the proposal here, which essentially adopts the bus approach to rail, and I would have moved that we direct staff to take these back, and I would like to see us rewrite the bus rules in the first place and then think about what the rules should be on the rail side. Obviously, that's not as pressing as other matters, and as long as we're not going to see this again for a while, I guess I don't have to worry about it. But I do believe that the staff should be directed at some point in this year to address this issue, which could come up again, and my preference for how to address it would be to re-examine the bus rules, which I think make no sense, and then propose sensible rules for both bus on the bus and the rail side. And that's my request to the board, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Can we proceed now? You have before you, you have the letter dated January 4th from Senator Barbara Mikulski of Maryland, addressed to me, but intended for the entire board. And she raises various questions. You should have a draft of a response to Senator Mikulski. Let me say, and I'm sure I'm speaking for all members of this board when I say that we very much appreciate the dedicated interest and engagement of Senator Mikulski on these issues. We are especially appreciative of the role that she played as a member of the Appropriations Committee in moving forward the $150 million in capital funding through the Congress of the United States. And we know that she has some very serious concerns that all of us share, and that we wanted to have this draft letter before you today, particularly since we want to be able to say that it was the subject of review by the board at an open board meeting. And so let me just conclude by saying that this draft was partially from the staff of Metro WMATA and partially my draft, which I prepared, and they have been incorporated. We have no pride of authorship. Any changes that people wish to make, we're certainly open to doing it. Is there any discussion on the letter, Mr. Benjamin?
Mr. Chair, I particularly like your remarks about Senator Mikulski, and I would suggest that those remarks in particular, the ones that recognize her being a longtime supporter of Metro and recognize the support that she's given for dedicated funding and her offer to provide additional federal support as necessary, or to work for additional support as necessary, should all be included in this letter. Those are right in the beginning. I mean, it's a very good statement that you made, and I think it belongs there.
Well, we will certainly modify the letter, and I assume you're also referring to the fact that Senator Mikulski is an advocate for empowering and authorizing the Federal Transit Administration to do that which it cannot legally do today, which is to set safety standards for our cars and for our transit systems.
I agree with that as well.
Because as some of you may not know, today the Federal Transit Administration is explicitly prohibited by federal law from setting crashworthiness standards for rail cars in our transit systems. Is there further discussion on the letter? We'll make that change, Mr. Zimmerman.
I was just trying to see that all the points raised in the senator's letter have been addressed, and one of them that I don't see concerns the issue of, what she refers to as an ombudsman mechanism that says no number to call if they have a problem. I think that Metro probably has quite a bit to say on this, but in any case, I think the letter needs to address that point and detail the means by which, in fact, customers can both call in an immediate problem, because there is a number, but also because we have a number of other mechanisms that probably should be detailed here, including, for instance, the creation of the Riders Council, and some other things that might be mentioned. You might also want to mention the creation of the Inspector General's office. At any rate, there's a number of things that I think address a point that she raised that I don't see addressed in the draft as it is, and I would recommend those be included.
All right. We will include that response in terms of those issues of customer engagement and issues. Is there further discussion?
I have a couple more comments.
Yes, please.
Senator Mikulski tends to be the, in my experience, the kind of person who likes very straight and very limited and very direct answers to some very direct questions. In several of the cases here, we sort of beat around the bush and throw out all sorts of information that may or may not be very direct. For instance, on the capital program, she said, what do you need in 2011? And break it out into three categories for me. And all I see is a lot of words that say, well, you know, we're working on it. I think we need to put together a chart that we can give her that says, this is what we need, this is what we would like. And what were the three categories? Broken into three categories, must do, should do, and like to do.
And that's for all fiscal needs, not just capital.
Okay, and I think that's, we need to give that to her and not give her a, take a look at our web, which shows what our program, our 10-year program looks like. She's asking for some very specific stuff. We need to give her specific stuff. I also think, given the talk report which just occurred and similar comments that may come out of the FTA review, that it's important for us to address at least to some degree those two reports to acknowledge what happened and where we're going, and note the fact that we expect similar results from the FTA review because it's inevitable. I think we have a situation in which the two governors and the mayor have strengthened the talk through a memorandum of understanding. I think that's well worth mentioning and indicating the commitment that all three jurisdictions, the two states and the district, have had to safety and to improving it. And that should be tied to what Mr. Graham commented on, which was that we support her in her endeavor to give that kind of oversight capability to the Federal Transit Administration. So I would cut back on some of the words here and focus very, very specifically on what she requested from us and make sure there's a checklist that says if she asked for it, we're giving it back to her in exactly the form she asked for it.
Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Benjamin. Mr. Zimmerman?
In Mr. Benjamin's comments and your earlier point that you'd made to us that this is, you know, clearly directed to the board, reminds me that last month we adopted three actions, specifically in response to the situation with the Tri-State Oversight Committee, and I think that probably should be made explicit. Those were actions of the board that directly addressed some of these questions in a fairly timely way, and given that that's, you know, the question is being asked what we're doing, I think we need to explain exactly what that was and bring that to our the center's attention.
Well, and I think we could include that as we can refer to it and then include it as an attachment. But I think that we would all agree that this could be a little bit leaner in terms of its impact, and we will work to reduce the verbiage in the letter.
And focus very directly on her requests.
Please. Is there further discussion? All right, then. I don't think we need a motion per se on this, but I do very much appreciate the comments that we've received from the board, and we will proceed. Is it okay? Do you want to see this letter again? Do you want it to have it circulated again, or are we free to send it out with the changes? Send it out. All right, that's what we'll do. Okie dokie. And that brings us to our motion for executive.
May I have a comment?
Yes, Mrs. Hodgson.
I'm sorry, we moved to the other item before I made the comment. When we prepare our public information for the public hearing, I would ask that we try and make sure we bring forward as much data as possible, as I mentioned, as the motion was on the table. You know, in the jurisdiction, when someone says we're going to raise their tax rate 1 cent. We know it's $18 million, and we don't need to tell them. They can figure it out themselves. And I think the same thing should happen when we talk about what we want here. And I would like to make sure that we make it broad enough so that whatever we have advertised, folks understand what is possible as well as what they might want to request at another time because they know the data and what it produces. So and I'm talking about preventive maintenance and all of those things so that people can really see that information. It should be part of the public information on our website or distributed prior to our hearing.
Yes, and let's refer the materials, Mr. Cato, let's refer the materials to our plain English expert on the staff so that we can have it in language that is readily understood, and then there can be appendices. We all know what an appendice is, or an appendix, we know what it is, for those who really want to get involved. But let's have some very readable information available at the hearing and before it. Okay, and there being no further business, I do have a motion. I move that the board meet an executive session to discuss safety and security matters consistent with board procedure Roman numeral 6.F. I note for the purposes of the media that we will convene an open session of the committee following the executive session to certify the discussions and to act upon any items discussed in executive session, if necessary, all of which is pursuant to our rules of procedure. Is there a second to the motion? It's been seconded by Mrs. Hutchins. Discussion, discussion, discussion. Hearing none, all those in favor say aye. Aye. Opposed, no. The ayes have it. And we now stand in recess for our executive session. Thank you all very much.